Hello, welcome to the third episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Editor-in-Chief Jordan Raup.
And I'm Staff Writer Dan Mecca.
Dan and I just came back from a great concert we'd like to tell you guys about.
The band that we saw was the Hold Steady. Kind of think five Bruce Springsteens. One guy sounds like Bruce Springsteen, and a nice retro hard rock to back them up, and that's kind of what the band sounds like if you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And it was a great show.
Definitely, yeah. Check out their 2006 album, Boys and Girls in America, or 2008's Stay Positive. They're both very good. Boys and Girls in America I like a bit better, but definitely check both of those out. Okay, so thank you for the positive response in the last two podcasts we've had. We've had a lot of fun doing them. And last week we mentioned we were going to do an Adventureland review, and I had to cut that out. But and a bit of good news, we are officially part of the Washington, D.C. Press.
And Buffalo.
And Buffalo, New York Press. And so that is why we can't post reviews before midnight of their opening day. So the Adventureland will be attached at the end of this podcast. But we have a couple more films to talk about and some news to talk about.
Yes, we do. We're gonna start off with movie news like we always do, and then we're gonna talk about a couple old movies we've been catching up on. Then we're just gonna actually add in a little thing where we're going to talk about just movies that are in theaters and how we feel about them, just mini reviews, you can call them. And then we're going to get to our review of Adventureland, and we're going to be having a little guest star of us who is actually in the process of becoming a writer for the site. So we're really excited about that. And that's for Adventureland.
Yes.
All right. Take it away, Jordan.
All right. So first bit of news. Well, not news per se, but a trailer came out. One of the best trailers I've seen in a long, long time.
Word.
Yes, it is for Spike Jonze, Where the Wild Things Are. And it premiered on the Ellen Show in the morning, in the morning of March 25th, and then it was attached to Monsters vs. Aliens this weekend. Although I saw Monsters vs. Aliens, and the only trailer that they showed was Night in the Museum 2, so I don't know what the hell they were doing. But Where the Wild Things trailer hit HD. HD quality came out, and it's amazing. Yeah, it uses a song by the band Arcade Fire, Wake Up, and Arcade Fire actually said that they did re-record a version for this. Specifically for this trailer.
The version that they recorded for the trailer is, I guess it sounds more acoustic. I mean,
it's not like the full band
acoustic,
sound.
Acoustic, but it's scrapped down. From the really kind of cathedral-like sound of the first Wake Up, or the original Wake Up.
What did you like about the trailer?
The trailer, I liked it a lot. Yeah. I liked it a lot. Actually, it was funny. I can't remember when I saw the trailer first. I could not remember if I had read the book when I was a child, which like I got like just.
Yeah,
lambasted for, like, because I guess
the book's by Maurice Sendak, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think that's it. But, anyway, so I went to Barnes & Noble and I read it. I went to Barnes & Noble and I read it just to be safe the day after I saw the trailer for the first time. And upon reading it and realizing that it's only like a 15-page book, it has about 10 lines,
yeah.
I am like so curious to see what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Catherine Keener's in it. Which is cool. That was like something that I didn't realize until like the fifth time of watching the trailer. I loved the trailer. I loved the lack of CGI.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You know how they use real. I guess they really created the.
And I heard like the actors are all in the suits. Like,
really?
Yeah. So I mean,
that's pretty cool. Yeah, James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Is one of them. Forest Whitaker is one of them. James Gandolfini's voice is I think the only voice that's actually in the trailer, which is cool.
Yeah, except all the and the yell, but that's it.
And the yell. But so that was cool. Yeah. And
I was talking to this guy online, and he was saying how like a lot of trailers are like almost mini movies in themselves, just the way like the creative.
Oh, of course.
Art, and like
I mean,
this
especially
one,
nowadays.
Yeah, this one. I'm just thinking of great trailers I've seen. I mean, Cloverfield.
Cloverfield was an incredible trailer.
But But yeah.
Well, I mean, The Dark Knight, I always thought was a very nicely cut trailer.
Yeah.
But This one is one of the best.
Yeah, no.
I mean,
I like the match cuts they use when he's running. And you notice that at the end, there's like five match cuts.
Oh,
like,
of him running.
Of him running. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And then like how like everything goes in together. Like they throw a snowball and then he jumps down like a.
Right. And I'm wondering. See, I'm wondering. I was talking to someone about this and having read it in Where the Wild Things, the little children's book. It's not. It never says that it's in his imagination or something. Yeah. It just kind of is like. It just kind of matter-of-factly states a forest grows in his room and everything. But it looks like there's going to be some sort of imaginary angle, seems like, because he's like he's in his snow tunnel or whatever in, it seems like, real life.
That's what I'm wondering, if it's going to like cut back and forth between.
Right. I don't know. I mean, how would you feel if they ended up making it like a narrative centered around
one of my favorite
world.
Comics is Calvin and Hobbes. Mm. And like the way they tell
the
story.
I used to call it Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, really?
I swear to God, for about 5 years. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
But I remember going to the library and just like getting those. They came in huge books, at least the ones I
had.
Yeah, huge. And I just
horizontally
read,
huge.
Yeah, and I just read all of them, and I just loved it. And the way they tell the story with there, it's so seamless. Like he'll go between his, but it never says, oh, here, this is imagined and this
is. But I mean, I always felt like it's assumed, isn't it?
I hope it's like that with this film. It's just seamlessly.
That's a good
point.
That's a really good reference.
Yeah. Like he goes in the woods or something, and then it just turns into the world that he's living in, and it's not like a.
No, I mean, you know, I have a lot of faith in Spike Jonze. A lot of faith.
And I'm so glad this movie is finally coming out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rumors about reshoots and stuff. And I think they did have to do it. But
I don't know if they're using it,
though. Positive. I don't know. There's been a lot of stuff.
I read there was test screenings, and there was children at the test screenings, and they just started crying throughout the film and asking their parents to leave and stuff. So, like,
really?
It was just really, But
that's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well,
so, I mean, the trailer itself is pretty sad. I think. I don't know. It's just very emotional.
The song. Yeah. I mean, it's a very tragic kind of a song. But, I mean, I can't wait to see it now.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, I couldn't wait to see it. Now I can't wait to see it at all. So
I'm with you. Yeah. It comes out in theaters October 16th, 2009.
And also, just a really quick shout out. And this is a trailer of less significance, but this is a book of my childhood. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Okay. The trailer was not as good. I don't know. Have you seen the trailer, Jordan?
I uploaded it, but I did not see it. I uploaded it too.
I love that book when I was a kid. Love that book so much. The trailer, it looks very like big budget Hollywood or whatever. Like, and it's Sony animation, which I don't even know. Is that a new thing? Is that like a new?
Yeah, I don't know. I know.
I've never heard of it. But
I know they showed
Bill
like,
Hader's. Yeah. Bill Hader's the guy who's.
Well, who else? Anna Faris isn't in.
Anna Faris and
Andy Samberg. Andy Samberg. Yeah.
Andy Samberg. It looks funny. It just looks like.
I heard they showed. You know, Show West is this weekend. This week at Las Vegas, and they showed like. Footage from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And then after that, they showed 45 minutes of up footage and like all this stuff. And it, like people were just like probably
just laughing,
like, just
probably.
Forgot about
Cloudy. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure it'll be on the level of, you know, Monsters versus Aliens or something, you know, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
But I just love that.
I gotta watch the trailer, but and also just, to give ourselves props.
Give those props.
Where the Wild Things trailer.
Yeah.
I uploaded to YouTube.
Jordan Raup. That's Jordan Raup right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Dan, What rank was it? In,
I believe it. Can
day.
I get a 2?
Yeah, number 2 most viewed video
on
all
YouTube.
Of YouTube.
All of YouTube.
All of YouTube in the day, and now I think it's number 8 in the week. And
if you're listening, you probably tubed it.
Hey, you probably YouTubed it, but
whether you know it or not.
I mean, more importantly, to give us props. I like that. You know that tons and tons of people are excited about this movie. I mean,
that's a good point. That's a really good point. Well, I truthfully was not aware. I mean, I always knew about this book, but I was not aware of how.
Much of a following.
Just kind
of
like, how huge it was, I guess.
It's just cool to see, like, it was...
Like, I know a kid. I didn't know about this until about 2 months, or 2 weeks ago. A friend of mine, an old friend of mine, has a full arm-length tattoo of Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, shit.
So he must be excited.
I saw a picture of that online, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my buddy Matt, who I worked with the paper at, and actually
That's
another
crazy.
One of my friends from the paper will be joining us later.
What did it look like?
It was, I think it was the picture of him walking.
Oh, okay.
You know, like,
I,
you know, the
I
famous
the,
picture of the kid.
Yeah, because
you know?
I saw a picture of when he's hanging from, like, the forest or something.
I don't
one
know,
of the little
yeah,
wild
I
things.
I could be wrong.
Some guy online had that. Anyways, crazy. Okay, moving on from Where the Wild Things Are. Check it out, though, when it comes out in theaters.
Definitely.
All right, next bit of news. It hit March 31st.
A bit of odd news.
Yeah. Yeah, MTV got to talk with David Cronenberg.
How
does
MTV get these talks?
They get a lot of exclusive stuff. It's really
what the
weird.
Hell
I don't know.
Are they doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's MTV. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They got to talk with David Cronenberg, the director of History of Violence and most recently Eastern Promises, and another movie he's coming out soon with Tom Cruise and Denzel Washington.
Oh, that just got announced.
Yeah, it just got announced.
I don't know what Cronenberg's funny. He totally turned his career and now he's doing all his big budget.
I read a review today. I read an interview today where he said he wants to like. He's not. He doesn't want to do the same thing. So
That's cool. But, I mean, you know, have you ever seen The Bug or Video Drone or The Fly? I'm sorry, The Fly or Video Drone.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right. So, anyways, so they asked him about Eastern Promises sequel because that was rumored for a while, and he said we are moving forward with it. And by we, he meant Viggo Mortensen, screenwriter Stephen Knight, and producer Paul Webster. And he also claimed they will have a creative meeting soon where they will decide on where to go with the sequel. So, what do you think about this news, Dan?
I was really excited about Eastern Promises when I heard it was coming out because I was a big fan of History of Violence, and I really liked Existenz and Cronenberg in general. What I've seen of his has pretty much always impressed me. So Eastern Promises was overall a disappointment for me.
Really?
I thought I did think so, but I mean it was a very well made movie.
Actually,
I
think I agree with you because I remember coming out of that and
movie.
We both thought it was like
yeah we saw it together.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was a good movie. Mm-hmm. By very much a good movie. But I remember walking in and being like wow like okay
yeah.
like that was kind of my exact reaction.
Yeah.
There's a couple of incredible scenes like the beginning. There's like an assassination scene that's really well done in a barbershop. That was very cool.
And there's one in the graveyard.
Then,
remember that the one
then,
in the graveyard.
Yeah. And then there's the scene, you know, the famous Viggo Mortensen naked
knife fight
scene. That's awesome. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Just because, you know.
Everything about that.
Just so visceral. It's ugh. Like, you feel like your balls are going to get cut off.
Yeah.
Like, that's. And, but there's parts of that movie that are just like, I don't know. They're not effective.
I didn't like the father character, you know.
Yeah, the uncle.
The uncle.
He was. Okay. He was supposed to be comic relief.
Yeah.
I don't think he was that funny. And yeah, you know, I'm starting to realize maybe Naomi Watts just isn't that good of an actress. I thought she was. Like, I really thought she was a good actress. 21 Grams, she has a couple of scenes in there that are just haunting. Like, very good. And The Painted Veil, she's good.
Yeah.
But like, between that and The International, Eastern Promises and The International, wow, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, she just needs something to bring her back. Because I had a problem with her. I had a problem with her in Eastern Promises. A sequel, though. I mean, what do you think about a sequel?
Yeah, I mean, it could be done. I mean
do you want to see a sequel?
No, I'd rather
Western
see something
promises?
Else. Yeah,
Northeastern
North,
Promises?
Yeah, Southern.
Southern
No, I find it funny because this film won the audience award. Me and Dan have gone to the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah,
it
won the audience award, which is so weird. It's
and
not like
Slumdog won the audience award. And it's so funny how one movie,
because
Eastern Promises kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
Except for Viggo Mortensen got an Academy Award.
Because Dan and I went to there, and we saw the premiere of Into the Wild, which I feel would.
Oh, yeah,
more
we were
of
there
like
that year.
Crowd,
yeah, we were there that year.
I feel like that.
Well,
we
saw Into the Wild.
There was a bunch.
Yeah, but the reaction to Into the Wild when we went there.
Michael Clayton was there. Remember that?
Yeah, but Michael Clayton though. That
was
movie
was no country
that
there?
That movie
I don't know.
That movie crawled up though. Michael Clayton was one of those movies that like when all the other big movies started kind of bombing.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And then like all of a sudden I was like, "Oh, Michael Clayton, that's a pretty good one." And then like it became
I just feel like there's other movies that should have won that award and I'm surprised that it won.
That's a good point. Actually, I forgot about that.
Like I can see like a best directing award
it won
but
the
like,
audience award?
Yeah, it won.
It's so weird. Yeah, because like Slumdog is the definition of a film festival audience award.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It was like because me and Jordan went to was it the premiere? Right?
It was at Telluride before.
No,
they
we went to the Toronto Film Festival premiere.
But I'm saying the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah, we went to the Toronto Film Festival premiere of it.
Yeah, which was the second time they've ever showed it.
Yeah, we walked out of that theater, you know, standing ovation.
Yeah.
We walked out of that theater, and I think we said to each other, "I mean, that's got to win the audience award, right?"
Yeah,
we pretty much said
definitely.
That, and then it did. And
yeah.
But I mean, by the time the audience award got announced, it was pretty much a given. I mean, that movie gained all of its momentum from
Telluride. It was either that
Toronto.
Or The Wrestler. I remember.
Yeah. But I mean, but I feel like you know there was the buzz. For,
oh yeah, it was crazy.
Slumdog was just obsessive. You know.
Yeah.
But Eastern Promises, yeah, I would rather see, I don't know, even History of Violence. I mean,
Return to form to, like, a weird...
It'd be cool to see another kind of Cronenberg-y,
yeah.
You know, like from the early Cronenberg movies.
Yeah.
But I mean, actually, the Tom Cruise-Denzel thing, now that I'm remembering it, kind of sounded pretty interesting. I mean, just to see Tom Cruise directed by Cronenberg.
Yeah, exactly.
He's kind of, like, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, But
so, okay.
What else we got?
Moving on. Actually, today there was rumors circling around that Danny McBride, James Franco would be together again for another film with director David Gordon Green. Well, those rumors were confirmed. They're going to be teaming up together in the comedy Your Highness, and the comedy it follows two spoiled and arrogant princes in a medieval fantasy setting. And when an evil wizard casts a spell on their father and kidnap the older prince's fiance, they're forced to go on a quest to save their family and the kingdom.
You should probably get high before you see this.
Yeah. And and it's scripted by Danny McBride and Ben Best, who, if you guys saw The Foot Fist Way, he plays Chuck the Truck Wallace. And he's also in Eastbound and Down. And he plays like the bartender at Eastbound and Down, his friend. And
the guy that he does coke with.
And yeah, and he's also a supporting role in Observer Report, which I'm really excited to see. But this movie, I loved Pineapple Express. And that's a movie that I just grew on me.
And I'm beginning to love it.
Yeah.
And when I first saw it, I didn't think it was incredible. But
just the style. I think, because people always say, oh, it's just a stoner comedy.
It is.
Yeah, I know. But like, it's there's a lot of action in it. Like, it's not. Yeah,
it's a stoner spoof.
Yeah.
I mean, they spoofed.
Yeah. And I just think it's a lot smarter than people give it credit for.
A lot smarter?
Yeah.
How's it smarter?
It's the jokes, like every piece of dialogue. So I know a lot of it's probably improvised. I don't know.
I know what you mean. I guess you're talking about smart in the sense.
Compared to like Grandma's Boy or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean,
because a lot of people I know are like, oh, it's just like you have to be high to see that. It's like another movie, like, you know, like a lot of people say Grandma's Boy, you have to be high to see that or something. But
yeah.
No, I mean, I don't think people should write it off, and I definitely. You know,
yeah.
I love David Gordon Green. I mean, it's kind of. Do you think it's interesting that he's coming back to another high budget comedy film rather than going back to like
he's Snow Angels? This, right?
Yeah, he's directing this. Yeah. Right.
You were on a conference call interview with him.
Yeah. When I saw, I'm from Rochester, New York, and the Kodak Theater is there, and Kodak is there, and. There's a Dryden Theater, it's called, and they do a lot of screenings. And they had a Q&A with David Gordon Green
after Pineapple Express.
Yeah, after Pineapple Express. Yeah. And it was like a couple weeks before the movie came out in wide release. And so I asked him a question. I asked him was, do you see yourself returning to indie films after this or going to big, like higher, bigger budget films? And he kind of just said, I'm going to do, you know, whatever. I have a lot of stuff lined up. And he does. He did some episodes of Eastbound and Down. He directed that. And I heard he has a cartoon. He mentioned a cartoon, some cartoon he had.
Yeah, that's right. I remember saying that.
And then,
but I mean, David Gordon Green, he made a name for himself with a movie called George Washington, which he wrote and directed. And I think it was kind of right out of college, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I remember he had Danny McBride was in that.
Was he in it?
All the Real Girls?
No, George Washington.
Oh, sorry.
I'm talking about. Yeah, George.
All the Real Girls was the first movie he did, though.
I don't think so. Yeah, check it. I don't know. I mean, you're probably right, but I always thought that George Washington was. But anyway, I just remember hearing about George Washington, and then, people like Roger Ebert really loved it, and it's kind of like a Terrence Malick movie meets
wow, I'm absolutely retarded. You're right. George Washington.
Thank you very much.
But then why? Because I remember he had to get Danny McBride to be in it. I thought that was right out of college. Because remember he, like, his lead actor dropped out.
No, because you remember, Danny McBride, because I remember Danny McBride was, I heard an interview and Danny McBride said that when they were, because Danny McBride and David Gordon Green went to college together in North Carolina. And I remember he said that when they were in college, David Gordon Green made a bunch of, like, crazy funny like movies, and then he made George Washington, which is not really. I mean, there's funny parts of it, but it really is a drama, and it's kind of like a character study of kids and stuff. Like I said, it's like a Terrence Malick in terms of there's a lot of long shots, but then there's long scenes of dialogue, which isn't that's not really like Malick. So it kind of it takes stuff from Malick, and it doesn't. And it's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful movie, but it's not an absurdly funny movie like Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
But that got him.
That's all. I have to watch that movie.
That got David Gordon Green established as this like indie auteur or whatever.
And then he made Undertow, right?
I don't know in what order exactly, but it was like All the Real Girls,
It was, yeah, George Washington was in 2000, All the Real Girls in 2003. Then he made Undertow.
And oh, Undertow.
And it took him 3 years to make another movie, still Snow Angels. But
right.
he made two movies. I mean, he made right. Pineapple Express.
Undertow, I thought was kind of a disappointment. It was like him trying to, I felt like it was him trying to fully embrace the Terrence Malick film.
Yeah. I liked it until the end. I didn't like the end.
It was good, but I wanted it to be great just because I love Malick movies, right. and I knew that was what it was going to be like, and I'm right. just so... Josh
but
Lucas...
I mean, you were pleasantly surprised by Snow Angels.
Oh, yeah. Well, Snow Angels is, I think, his best film.
Yeah.
I think. I have yet to see All the Real Girls, and I'm pissed that I haven't seen it yet, which pisses me off. But Snow Angels I loved. I thought the ending was a little too much, but Snow Angels I loved, absolutely. But anyway, I have no problem with him staying doing big budget. I would have... If we were talking about this the week after I saw Pineapple Express, because I didn't think it was that good. But it's a movie that has legs. Pineapple Express will be around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I have no problem for him to try
it. What do you feel about Seth Rogen not being in this movie?
I don't really care.
Yeah, I know what I was going to say.
You know, James Franco was Pineapple Express. Yeah. And I mean, well, he was. And then
Franco, McBride Gordon, was. Gordon Green.
I know, listen, nothing against Seth Rogen. I think Seth Rogen got the raw deal in terms of character. His character was just kind of,
but then I mean, they needed
you know, not necessarily
like
the straight man. I mean, there's no straight man in that movie, but you know, James Franco just owned that role. I mean, he got to play the stoner, and he played it with pride. You know, and it was
I love
so funny.
You know, I love watching like I know this is stretching, but Rush Hour movies like that when I was little, like this comedy, like buddy comedies, and like
Brett Ratner films. You just love Brett Ratner.
I mean, there hasn't been what was that crappy one with Robert De Niro and 15 Minutes.
15 minutes? Are you going to shout that movie out right now?
No, I didn't like it at all. I'm saying.
Are you talking about the movie with Ed Burns?
What's the movie with Robert De Niro and he teams up with someone? And
he teams up with a lot of people.
Okay.
Are you talking about Showtime with Eddie Murphy?
Showtime.
Oh,
yes,
my God. Get off this
podcast
right now.
I don't like that movie at all. That's what I'm saying. There's Rush Hour and then, like, which I enjoyed. I know. Okay.
I'm sorry. Continue. No.
Rush Hour was
why did you like Showtime?
No, I didn't like Showtime at all. I'm saying there's been movies like that, like these buddy movies.
Buddy movies.
They just pair people up and they're like, oh, let's see how that works. And, like, it never worked. Like, I mean, it hasn't worked. Can you think of a good buddy?
Well, I mean, most of the good buddy movies came when they started in the 80s.
Yeah,
you know, 48 Hours, Lethal Weapon, you know, movies like that.
Yeah, and it's just, I just like Pineapple Express because it was kind of
Tango and Cash.
A new twist. Yeah. Oh, God.
Uh-huh.
No, you're right.
That's a good point, actually. I didn't think about that.
Because I can't think of any really good ones in the last, you know, whatever. But I felt like
buddy comedies? Well, yeah, Rush Hour was...
I love Rush Hour, I know.
I mean, it's one of those things. It's childhood, you know what I mean?
I know, that's what I mean, yeah.
Rush Hour 3, though.
Did you think... God.
Here's the thing, though, that worries me. Was Rush Hour 3 like just as good as Rush Hour, but we don't know because like nostalgia sets in when we watch Rush Hour and we convince ourselves it's better?
That could be true.
Because I was watching Rush Hour 2 and like I was talking to my little brother who's 11 and he was watching Rush Hour 3.
Yeah.
And he liked it. And I was like, "Sam, like are you an idiot?" You know? But he's not an idiot. You know, he's a smart little kid.
I mean, And
it made me think, like, maybe he's watching what was Rush Hour for me, you know, 12 years ago when it came out.
That's a good point.
And that scares me because what does that mean? What does that mean about our future? No.
There's always movies like that. Like, you know, as we mentioned before, I love Corky Romano. That's 4% on Rotten Tomatoes or something. Now, I know the Rotten Tomatoes score isn't the most definitive of methods, but Rush Hour 3 has a 20%. While Rush Hour has a 62, so yeah. I know with older movies though that will like add reviews in later, so I don't know how accurate that is, but
yeah, and I think Rush Hour 3 has a lot more reviews than Rush Hour 1.
Yeah. Well, with that said, you know, I liked Rush Hour. I'm looking forward. What are we getting back at? Pineapple Express. I like Pineapple Express, I'm gonna like Your Highness.
Yeah. I think that
I'm excited to see that. I heard there's a lot of special effects are going to do because it's going to be like an adventure, more of an adventure
movie.
That's
kind of cool.
So I heard it like a really popular like special effects company is actually doing it for them.
Really?
So, yeah. So
that's good.
So
I mean,
I don't know.
It could be good. I would just like to see, you know, maybe try to go one step higher from Pineapple Express and try to keep outdoing themselves.
Yeah. All right,
let's do cool. What we got next?
Next bit of news. This is a little touchy, I would say. But X-Men Origins Wolverine.
It really claws at the heartstrings.
So X-Men Origins Wolverine is X-Men Origins Wolverine is currently set for a May 1st, 2009 release date. Actually, I think it's April 29th. I think it's coming out on a Wednesday. But anyways, a lot of people are going to be seeing it a lot earlier because a DVD quality work print has leaked online. Chud.com actually put up an interesting article about the process of how this could possibly happen, and I think Devin Fratcher wrote it, and he said it was actually a lot. He's surprised that more things like this don't happen screeners and work prints get passed around like a business cards or whatever. I don't know, like something like ridiculous.
Well, I mean, because I kind of had a first-hand experience with that, and I'm sure many people have. I dated a girl a couple years ago whose step-grandmother was in SAG. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's just kind of, just an actress, nothing huge, but she was a SAG member. Yeah. And what happens is, it's kind of like maybe for the lesser SAG members, they pick out of a hat kind of a thing. And so every once in a blue moon, you get to be part of the voting team for the SAG Awards. And so
you get all the screeners.
You get all the screeners. Like literally, you just ask for a screener, and they give you. So she had like, 15 screeners.
That's slightly different because like he's talking about like movies that haven't even got released yet to DVD, let alone the theater. Like these are things that aren't finished yet that like people are passing around. So.
Yeah, no, I guess it's a little bit. But I mean.
I mean, it's still movies that aren't widely available. That even actually, you're right, because some screeners don't hit the theater yet.
Yeah, because I watched Pan's Labyrinth before it got released in the United States.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I don't know. I mean, you're right. You're right. In one sense, but I'm just saying. Yeah. You know, it's
crazy.
I remember thinking that when I was watching these movies. Yeah. I remember thinking, I could just burn this right now.
Yeah. So yeah, before, you guys, everyone that's listening goes and runs and downloads this, the quality, it's DVD. I watched, a couple minutes of it.
That's not right, Jordan.
I know. No, I just check it out. And
yep, whatever.
And there are 14 minutes of it that Gavin Hood, the director, reshot, are not in here. And it also doesn't include...
That was the Deadpool shoot?
I think Ryan Reynolds had a lot of scheduling conflicts when they were doing the initial shoot, so he came back and reshot.
Well, he
reshot.
Is Ryan
can't,
Reynolds.
And I can't, yeah. I know, dude. He's got the proposal and Eventureland.
He's got the proposal. So. And Fireflies in the Garden.
That's right. Okay, so yeah, so this... It also includes some placeholder audio. Actually, the Batman Begins soundtrack, which is actually kind of funny. Just direct songs fully lifted from that placed in the movie, so I don't know.
Really? Just
yeah,
to, like, hold...
That's serious. Hold songs, like, just placed...
To, like...
No, no, like, where they were going to put original music, I assume.
Oh, so it just... That's awesome.
Like, to get the mood
people
right.
People do that? That's how they
I guess
do that?
So. It's kind of funny that's kind of revealed through this leak.
I guess
leak,
you could do
but...
that, right? That's kind of funny. I never thought about that.
Yeah, and some of the CGI is unfinished and stuff, but, now, in terms of box office, do you think it's going to affect it? Yeah.
Because
I know...
I don't know. I think the thing about Wolverine that I'm really excited to see, or curious to see, is... I wonder, we're in an age in a continual growing age, whatever, of, web, of internet, of
social media.
Twitter, Twitter revolution, whatever you want to call it. And I want to see what kind of effect all this is going to have. Because, I mean, Wolverine's gotten really bad buzz. Just kind of across the board, pretty much really bad buzz.
I mean, when an actor of a movie has to send
an email
to Ain't It Cool to say, hey, the movie's actually good, don't worry, like, that's not...
I mean, and I appreciate Hugh Jackman for doing that for whatever reason he did, whatever it was, but there's just so much, I mean, and the thing is, you have Fox producing it, and they just, I was talking to someone about this earlier today, they just underestimated some things, and the biggest thing they underestimated was the Deadpool thing. I mean, because we go to school with a film department. We talk to a lot of film kids, a lot of kind of geeky, graphic novel reading kids, and we're right up with them. It's not we're no different. And but one thing I really didn't know is like the cult following that Deadpool has, and this whole thing about him not having the same outfit he had in the costume, you know, the red one piece that he's so famous for having. And I guess his scars aren't as bad because they want Ryan Reynolds to continue to look pretty or something. That's like another rumor. And I honestly feel like it's kind of unfair, but getting back to your box office question.
Yeah.
I don't think this. Wow, what's up?
Here's a list of 20th Century Fox movies that have come out. Just take a look at this list. This is going back from X-Men Origins Wolverine, Back to the Past, Dragon Ball Evolution, Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Max Payne, Babylon AD, The X-Files, I Want to Believe, Space Chimps, Meet Dave, Jumper, Aliens vs. Predator Requiem, The Seeker, The Dark is Rising, Pathfinder, Aragon, My Super Ex-Girlfriend, The Omen, X-Men The Last Stand, Fantastic Four, Hide and Seek, Elektra, and Aliens vs. Predator.
How are they still in business?
I don't know.
No, seriously.
It's ridiculous. Like, I mean...
That's mind-blowing.
The leak is horrible, but, like, for a studio that puts out, like, is supposed to put out these, like,
were they,
movies,
wait,
like,
were they behind X-Men 3? No. They were.
Well, yeah, it's on the
list. Did you just say that?
Yeah, X-Men 3. I missed The Last Stand, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I feel like they don't have a grasp on what is hip. No, what could be popular.
I mean, what are they doing wrong? Like, it's just so weird.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it goes back to, we were... A lot. I feel like what they're not doing is they're not making investments, right? Like, I'm in terms of in the movies they're making. Right. Like, perfect example. We were listening to the Slash Film, right? The Slash Film podcast.
Slash Filmcast.
And Kevin Smith was a guest.
Oh, for the Watchmen review.
Yeah, a guest star. He was talking about Watchmen, and he was talking about how, you know, they were talking about how the box office for Watchmen wasn't particularly good and everything. Yeah. But what Kevin Smith said was, no matter what, this makes Warner Brothers look like the big studio, you know, of the big studios, the one with the biggest balls. And he said that was one of the reasons that he is making
a couple of dicks
with them, which is his first studio movie.
Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan.
And that he didn't write a screenplay for.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really telling thing. I mean, here's Kevin Smith, who is a filmmaker. He's an established filmmaker. And he's saying straight out, Warner Brothers made this movie, and because they made this movie, even if they lose whatever, if they lose $40 million off it, let's say.
Of Watchmen.
You know, yeah, because because it was an investment.
Brothers actually announced that they're going to stay away from R-rated movies now. Did you see that?
No. So, I mean, hopefully, I hope after I say this, they don't revert and become like Fox. but my point is, you know, if I'm a filmmaker, you know, and I have a screenplay, and they're both looking at them or something, and I know that's not the way it works, but let's just hypothetical it. I want Warner Brothers to take it because, hey, they made Watchmen. You know what I mean? And what was the studio that was trying to sue them and prevent it from ever getting made?
Yeah.
Motherfucking Fox. You know, and it's just like, listen, we're not making this stuff up. You know, we're not making Fox the bad guys. Just, that's the way they look. I mean, Street Fighter?
Yeah.
The Legend of Chun-Li? Yeah. Really? Is that what we're doing now?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
But,
people
are texting me. They're so pissed.
I know.
No, but, yeah, I mean, what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know a lot of people say this, but an ongoing joke is, like, you know, Fox Searchlight, they find all these great movies. Slumdog was going to get trash. It was going to go straight to DVD. They picked it up. They sent it to Stardom.
Yeah, they're awesome at picking movies that other people have made.
It's ridiculous how many great movies they find. So people always say, oh, how far away
are the wrestlers, Slumdog, Juno.
You know?
Yeah, but it's a different thing, though.
It's still,
I mean, what they're doing is they have an eye. Yeah, but you're right, though, because if they have an eye for what's going to get nominated and win Oscars, then why can't they have an eye for what's going to sell tickets?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because Slumdog costs $15 million, and it's made over $100 million in profits domestically.
Yeah,
no,
worldwide.
Wait.
Worldwide. Over 100 domestically. Yeah.
I'm right. And then much more worldwide.
I think even upwards of 130. You
know? But also Taken.
Okay, I was going to say that.
Fox bought Taken.
Yeah, back to Wolverine, the leaks. So some movies have leaked early.
That was a good segue by me. Yes, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
So, Hostel 2, that a work print of that leaked a couple weeks early.
And that bombed.
Maybe a week.
That
and
bombed.
Eli Roth blamed that directly on the work print. That's
it could have been
said.
That it was Hostel 2, though.
I know.
It could have just been because that it was Hostel 2.
And another couple, Ang Lee's Hulk, also work print leaked of that. That was the biggest previous one, you know, the biggest.
Oh, I don't know.
But yeah, that leaked a couple weeks. And I don't know if that really had a big effect.
Yeah, but those two movies, though.
No. And,
but
Wolverine, I mean, Wolverine is like people. You know,
yeah, no, good point. No, very good point.
And then I know the most recent Star Wars film, it leaked a week before.
Yeah,
and,
right. I forgot about that.
So,
that was,
I mean,
that
and that,
crazy.
If you look at that had no effect on the box office. That movie made so much money.
Oh, yeah.
And
actually, but it didn't make as much, though, as the other two.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't mean a lot. But anyways.
I don't think it did.
Yeah.
But I mean, Taken not, nothing
recent,
significant.
Taken most recently, they came out in 2000. Actually,
five months.
A long time. I think maybe in 2007 it came out in different countries.
Yeah.
And then the DVD release in a different region was in like October, September of 2008.
We watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it made its way available to other people. And in October, and we watched it, and you know, we loved it, and that had no effect on the box office. Taken domestically made $138 million,
huge hit
for a movie that like really had no, like, we saw some early trailers, like it might have gotten we thought it was gonna get a fall release. And
do you remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
I remember actually I was talking to Jordan, and I said to you, Jordan, I said, you know, it's getting a January release or a January
yeah,
release. And I was like, dumping it. Like, you know, they know their work print release and it's going to make.
Well,
like,
no, it was like DVD quality. 15.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you're right. And like, you know, it's, they're just dumping it. Fox is dumping it.
Yeah.
It's going to make no money domestically.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's made enough, whatever. And I was like, so wrong.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how wrong I was. Yeah. Like,
I'm so glad too.
My parents, okay, and like, you know, I mean, you know, my mom goes to movies and everything. She, you know, she's one of the reasons I got into movies. But,
yeah.
But my dad is—he's a reader. You know what I mean? Man does not go to movies. Okay, this guy saw Taken. Okay,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? My little brother saw Taken.
I feel like
Liam fucking Neeson.
Taken and like Gran Torino. Those were both movies that like.
But I mean, at least Gran Torino had a reason. Like it was like Clint Eastwood.
I was just surprised though. But no, I definitely had a reason. But I just remember they were kind of like. Both those movies that started, the Taken start slow, not really, but it definitely
it opened to 20.
It didn't have bad drops each week. It was
that was a big thing. Yeah.
But both those movies went on to make so much.
I don't think it had dropped like more than 35% or something. Like,
both those movies went on just to make so much money. It's like ridiculous.
But I wish, and I don't know how much Taken cost. Did you ever hear about that? How much it cost? I'm really curious.
Yeah.
I know a Gran Torino cost like 35 or something.
He
like
shot
that.
It in 2 weeks. It's ridiculous.
So.
I mean, I would say don't watch Wolverine, or I mean,
well,
definitely don't.
I am gonna watch the work print, and I'm gonna pay to see, because I want to see what changes they made.
That is interesting, yeah.
But don't not go.
Yeah.
Unless you hear it's really bad, I don't want to say.
I've heard it's really bad.
I hope it's not that bad.
I know.
Gavin Hood, he had so much going for him, and he made Rendition. Do you remember we saw Rendition?
Oh, yeah, we saw the premiere Rendition.
Holy shit, that movie's terrifyingly bad.
Standing ovation there, remember Standing Ovation? And we got out, we're like, damn.
Courtesy call.
That was
a courtesy ovation.
Was that good? No.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, so,
anyway.
So news, we're done with. That's the last piece of news.
Yes,
Go see it. It comes out April 29th. Go see X-Men Origins Wolverine. At least do it for the Jack. The Jack man.
Do it for the Jack.
And Ryan Reynolds.
I'm a big Ryan Reynolds fan. I really am.
All right. So
that's the way it is.
That's good for news. So some older films we have been watching.
Word.
The first film, which actually watched directly after we did the last podcast. Actually, I was watching it while you guys were recording the Adventureland review.
Oh, right.
I went up to the other room and started watching. Yeah, so this movie is...
Jordan has not seen Adventureland yet.
Yeah, which I can't wait to see Friday. Anyways, an Adventureland review will be attached to the end of this podcast.
Okay. I can't wait to see Four Fast, Four Furious.
Okay, we will talk about
I'm
that.
I'm not
okay.
even kidding.
Okay. So, right. This is a 1999 film directed by the infamous Doug Liman.
Is he infamous? I guess he is. He's infamous.
No. This film is Go. Director.
Go.
What a movie.
I love this movie.
I love it as well. Yeah, the movie, if you haven't seen it, and I was kind of surprised, like, not a lot of people have heard, like, I remember, I've seen the poster, I was like, you know, and not a lot of people I know have even seen it.
Yeah, I mean, it's got people see it, a significant cult following,
yeah,
though. But you're right,
It's one of those movies where it's very, like, kinetic, the editing, and, you know, it's very, and it's it tells a story of a group of people who are all interrelated, and it's kind of the events of a drug deal.
Yeah, like a Pulp Fiction feel.
Yeah, yeah, definitely Pulp Fiction. And yeah, it just stars Katie Holmes, Sarah Pauly,
Scott Wolf. Timothy Oliphant.
Jay Moore is in it. Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy Oliphant, if you don't know, was the pimp from The Girl Next Door. He was the pimp from The Girl Next Door. He was...
The bad guy in Live Free or Die Hard.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. The bad guy in Live Free or Die Hard. He's coming into his own. He actually is in Damages, which is an awesome show.
Yeah. But so this movie just kind of tells us a story, kind of a one night.
Right. It kind of revolves around one party that everyone's trying to go to or goes to. Eventually, I think everyone goes to it. It's just really snappy.
Yeah.
Very funny. Yeah. It's like Pulp Fiction light. Pulp Fiction for a younger generation, I guess you could say. With a younger generation acting.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many memorable parts. The soundtrack is awesome. One of my favorite uses.
BT did the soundtrack for that.
What?
The score. Well, the score music. The band score. BT. They're like an electronic band. But yeah.
Well. In the soundtrack, one of my favorite uses of a song in like any movie is there's a scene where Taye Diggs is
wearing,
you know what I'm talking about? Steal My Sunshine. By who did that?
Len,
right. Steal My Sunshine. Taye Diggs, who I refer to as the Black Brad Pitt because he's a beautiful man.
Yeah.
And he's the Black Brad Pitt. That's what I call him. Anyway, he has this really stupid looking gold jacket on and everyone thinks that he is a chauffeur. Or a valet, man. So this guy in a Ferrari gets up and throws him his keys. And the minute the guy throws him his keys, the opening for Steal My Sunshine comes on. And they end up stealing the Ferrari and driving around Las Vegas, getting into like loads of trouble. And it is so perfect. I could watch that scene again and again and again. And that's like what this whole movie is. Katie Holmes has never been better.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Which I don't know what that means, but she's very good in this.
Yeah, it's just so like there's not a dead moment in flawless. Something is always happening.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it just literally. Yeah, you're right. That's a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah, everyone's
an appropriate title.
Everyone
appropriate
goes,
title for sure. And they say it a lot in the movie. I never even realized.
Yeah, I know. I was watching.
Like
yeah,
when
yeah.
we watched it, like I've seen it like four times, and they say it so many times.
It's the writer of this. John August.
Let's just get a quick. We're talking about Ryan Reynolds. John August wrote.
Oh, dude, he did Tiny AE. If you guys go on the film stage, check out my top 15 animations of the last 10 years in honor of Monsters vs. Aliens coming out. And Tiny AE, I love. It's in my top
five. I love it as well.
It's my number five. But anyway,
one movie quickly that'll be Jordan forgot to mention, so. Which pissed me off in his 15, was Treasure Planet, which is a great movie. And Jordan freaking forgot to put it on there because he's an asshole. Anyway.
Oh, dude, he wrote Big Fish, please.
He wrote Big Fish. On, this guy's a good writer. Amazing. But anyway, he wrote and directed a movie called The Nines. Okay? It was his directorial debut. And that movie is great.
And he directed it, too.
I know. I said it was a directorial debut. Are you listening to me? Are you speaking by yourself? Because I thought this was a two-person
Even though
podcast.
We're in the same room, I really don't pay attention to you.
I hate you.
Okay, keep going.
You're not redeeming. Anyway. Great movie. Ryan Reynolds is in it, holds his own, plays three different characters, totally asks a lot of questions, doesn't answer all of them. Totally underrated movie. Gotta go see it. I don't care if you don't like it. It's very polarizing. Well, I do care, but I think that you'll like it, and that's why I'm telling you to go see it. Give it a shot. Mm-hmm. Definitely. The Nines.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on because we've got a lot of movies to talk about.
So, an old movie that I recently caught up with a couple of my other roommates actually is Gross Point Blank, directed by George Armitage. I believe that's how you say his name.
Yep.
And starring the one and only John Cusack, who I love and I will always love, no matter how many Must Love Dogs movies he makes. I will always love him. And it's a 1997 movie, and Cusack plays a hitman who decides to attend his 10-year high school reunion, and he runs into the love of his life, Minnie Driver, who he stood up at the prom 10 years earlier. His secretary is played by Joan Cusack, who's his sister in real life. His psychiatrist is played by Alan Arkin, who's really funny in this movie. His old friend who he runs into is played by Jeremy Piven of Entourage fame. He's in a lot of John Cusack movies, obviously, and he's always been, really funny, actually. So it's kind of cool seeing him pre-Ari. And Hank Azaria is even in it for a little bit, and so is Dan Aykroyd. A lot of people in this movie. This movie is great. I love this movie. It's one of my personal favorites. There's just so many weird things that go on in it. John Cusack just owns his role. It was one of his, I'm not going to say one of his first turns towards dark comedy, because he made like Bullets Over Broadway and The Grifters and stuff. But like, this is kind of the beginning, I think, of the second part of his career, which has led him to things like 1408 and, you know, just kind of...
Dude, he made Con Air.
Identity,
Same year as that one. I just watched that. That was on TNT.
Dude, Con Air.
I think it's on TNT every hour.
Great movie we should talk about one day for the old movies. Yeah, but Cusack, he just owns this movie. And Minnie Driver, I mean, is so adorable. I can't even describe to you how like cute she is in this movie. And the soundtrack's incredible. The screenplay is flawless. Who wrote that?
Yeah, it was Jankowitz. Well, it's based on a story by him.
Really?
Yeah, this is the only movie he's ever made.
It's just so,
Tom Jankowitz.
It's so clever. It's really the definition of a dark comedy in a lot of ways. There's a lot of just really memorable scenes. There's this great shootout that happens in, a convenience store that used to be the exact spot where John Cusack lived, like his home, his childhood home, and it got replaced by a convenience store. And so it's just such a great movie. I totally recommend it. I can't think of a person in the world who wouldn't like it. Mm-hmm. And it was just nice seeing it again after so long. All right.
So, thank you, Dan. I saw it a long time ago. I can't really say much because I don't.
Don't say anything then.
All right.
Just don't say anything. All right,
moving on. I saw three movies in the theater.
Yes. Yes.
And two of them. You know, we saw. I saw not with Dan. So the two movies. Well, the first movie I saw was Entre les Mille, and I can't speak French, so that stands for The Class. yes, this movie won the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, the Cannes Film Festival.
Yes, which Dan will be going to, and Film Stage will be reporting from, hopefully.
Yes, no, definitely.
Definitely. So this film, it's about a teacher, Francois Begdu, and that is not probably pronounced right. But anyways, it's just about pretty much his life as a teacher, in this tough, you know, French class, and this movie I did enjoy it. It plays like a documentary. There's the entire time you feel like you're in a class. I don't think the camera never steps into the homes of these children. It never steps anywhere outside the boundaries of this classroom. And I'll make the review quick because we have a lot of other stuff to talk about. But I would definitely recommend seeing it. I don't think I would, ever watch it again. I mean, it's good. The next film I saw was Monster vs. Aliens. I saw it in 3D IMAX.
Ooh.
This film is directed by Rob Letterman and Conrad Vernon. Mm. The last film Rob Letterman did was Shark Tale, which is, was just disregarded pretty much as a Finding Nemo knockoff. But
pretty much.
Yeah. Anyway, so this movie, huge voice cast, talent. Reese Witherspoon.
I don't think I've ever heard of a bigger
Seth Rogen, cast Hugh Laurie, Will Arnett, Kiefer Sutherland, Rainn Wilson was in this, Stephen Colbert, Paul Rudd, Jeffrey Tambor, Renee Zellweger, Ed Helms, John Krasinski, Amy Poehler. It's like, what is going on? It's just crazy. And all of their voice acting was great. And Stephen Colbert, there's a couple times he was a president. It was a little... But, I mean, it's funny scenes,
Stephen Colbert.
Yeah. Stephen Colbert's funny scenes, you know, made up for it.
So how was it? DreamWorks?
Yeah, DreamWorks, you know, everyone loves Kung Fu Panda. I've tried 3 times to watch it, and I couldn't make it past the first 5 minutes, so.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. Anyways,
Does everyone love it, really?
Yeah. It's,
everyone I mean, who might, loved it should watch I, more.
Oh, yeah, more.
Because Mark Osborne directed...
directed more.
The guy who directed Kung Fu Panda directed...
Yeah, search for online. You can find it.
You can find it on YouTube if you...
Seriously, watch it. It is the best short animation I've seen.
It's the best short animation I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Better than anything by the Brothers Kwai. I'm saying that. Yeah. And I know that's big, yeah. But it's true.
Okay, so yeah, Monster vs. Aliens. The humor, it just... There wasn't enough humor. Like, and the times when they really tried with humor, yeah, it just wasn't enough for me. And
I heard there wasn't enough 3D either.
No, that's not true. Our roommates saw it and they said that. The thing with the... Yeah, I don't want to get into it, no. The 3D was great.
Was it?
Yeah. And there's moments... You know, I don't know, because our roommates saw it and they were like, there wasn't enough 3D. I think they were looking for moments where the 3D popped out at them and, like, hit them in the face and you know, fondled them. But, like...
fondled them. But like My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, like My Bloody Valentine. Yeah, but, and this movie starts out... There's a part in the beginning of the movie where it does do that with... the paddleball thing, you know, like the generic thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, oh no, like, is this going to be the whole movie? Like,
but
no, it dies down. And like the rest of the film, it's pretty seamless. And like, there's moments, there was a moment when, one of the aliens, he lands on Earth. And there's a moment when it's a really, you know, long shot far away. And you see just like hundreds of soldiers, you know, about to fire at him. And just the sense of depth is, like, ridiculous. Because, like, you can literally see each soldier and you feel like they're – each one is, you know, further away. And there's, like, 100 of them. And with tanks and stuff, it's just – the sense of depth is crazy. And nothing in that scene really pops out at you. But just – if you just sit there and look at it, it's just crazy. There's another scene. I was listening to the Film Spotting podcast. And they were talking about the scene that really took their breath away. Which I don't know if it took my breath away, but it was good. There's a in the middle of the film, there's a really, really long fight scene between, you know, two really huge monsters, and there's this another long shot.
Aliens?
Monsters versus aliens, sorry. And
because they're versing each other.
Yeah, they're versing each other. And you know, these two face off in front of the Golden Gate Bridge, and you're just like, whoa. You know, when they pull back and you just see, like, and it's just a great animation. And yeah.
I mean, so what would you say, I mean, in terms of How this compares to
the Pixar stuff?
Pixar.
It's so hard because those films, they're just such. It's just such a different level. They go into so many more. You know, there's just so much more to them. I feel like, not to be like, I know everyone's a Pixar fanboy, but
well, I mean, there's got to be a reason.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, case in point, the name of this movie is Monsters vs. Aliens.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean. The thing, I haven't seen it, okay?
Yeah.
The thing that a lot of people, I've talked to a lot of people who've seen it.
Yeah.
And they, a lot more, everyone, pretty much everyone I've talked to, you know, critic or just regular dude,
yeah,
has said that it's the story that's the biggest problem.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm right. I mean, that's.
Yeah. The movie is enjoyable and the action is enjoyable, but the story, I mean, it's.
I mean, what made Wall-E?
Yeah, the story in Wall-E, it's just so, the beginning is so original. And just take any frame from a DreamWorks animation, then compare it to a Pixar animation, there's so much, you know, more depth than just. There's so much.
I mean, narrative more. Depth, even.
Narrative depth, yeah. Right. But every, yeah, I don't know. It just.
But also, I mean, also the animation's just better too.
Yeah.
And I mean, in general.
But with that said, Monsters vs. Aliens is enjoyable. It's not a waste of money by any means. I mean, $14 for IMAX 3D ticket is a lot.
Is that a waste of money? It's not a waste of money.
But no,
You would have paid it again.
Yeah. Right. Paid it again. I wouldn't go see it again. But.
No, I mean, if I you had to go back, you would have paid it again. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Monsters vs. Aliens, go see it. You know. I
mean, 1 out of 10. What do you give it? 1 out of 10.
I give it a 6, but I like that factors in, you know, replayability.
Yeah, that's good. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
All right, so let's move on.
All right.
What do we got next?
So last film,
the movie that I saw.
Yeah, me and Dan both saw this film.
Oh yeah, we did.
Last film we're gonna talk about is. Alex Proyas's Knowing.
Starring Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. No, this film did come out March 20th, so it's been, you know,
two weeks,
yeah. So, but
it's worth talking about, though.
This film is definitely worth talking about it. Before you know, shut off this podcast, you're like, this movie looks like crap. Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Because I almost thought the same thing for a little bit, but...
Ambitious.
It's an ambitious.
That is the word.
Ambitious as hell movie.
That is the word for no
one. But definitely go see it, and we're definitely going to talk about some spoilers. So, If you know,
if you haven't seen Nolan,
if you haven't seen it, just fast forward like 5 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes
to the awesome Adventureland review.
Yeah, which is coming up. But yeah, so knowing this movie, I'm sure everyone knows about it now because you know the trailers, you know, pretty much.
No, yeah, just are about, everywhere about it. What yeah. you know, it's
a set of numbers.
It's set up like the number 23 kind yeah. of in the trailer.
A set of numbers pretty much predict disasters. Nicolas Cage comes across this paper through a time capsule his mm-hmm. son mm-hmm. Received at school from 1959. And anyway, so let's just see. Let's go into spoilers.
Okay. I mean, okay. Well, I mean, we just talk yeah. about. I mean, the okay. Well, I'm just gonna say. Just
tell them the ending.
For all those who've seen the number 23. Quickly, and you know, and this isn't quite spoilers yet, so but just turn it off. For all those who have seen the number 23 and know how bad it is, okay, the thing that makes this movie different is that it's a lot more like ambitious. Like we said, it is a sci-fi movie, it is a message movie, it talks about a lot of things, it has a lot of idealisms, and that all that separates it from the number 23, which kind of used the numbers thing as a gimmick, and it became just a murder mystery, which is just it became just like any other murder mystery, and that was the worst part about the number 23, right? It was even worse than the whole number system. Anyway, knowing, and this is where we're getting to spoilers.
Yeah.
You just want to give away the ending.
Yeah. So pretty much, this Nicolas Cage, she's these, you know, these crashes, these disasters happening.
Based on the numbers.
Yeah. So one is a plane crash, which is a great extended shot, long
all the,
shot.
All the disaster scenes are beautifully shot.
Yeah. And there's an underground train scene with the I mean, you guys who are, or listening have obviously seen the movie, so you know what we're talking about. And hopefully you liked them as much as we did. But so the film, pretty much by the end, we figure out the disasters were happening. And these either, you could say aliens or angels.
Right.
Are already on Earth, and they're you know, telling these children, they're trying to warn the children,
right?
You know, to prepare
who
them.
Who are prophets?
Yeah,
the children are prophet. I mean, or you know, you could say vectors or something. You know, if you wanted to be science fiction about it, and see, this is where
It's great because
this is where the movie is ambitious and very awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, this film. You know, it can go either ways. You can see it as a science fiction film.
There is a lot of Christian symbolism.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of blatant Christian symbolism.
Or, I mean, there's the whole religion aspect, and there's also the whole sci-fi, you know.
Right. No, and that's where it's great. I mean, it literally throws Christian symbolism in your face.
Yeah.
Ezekiel. And
but
I
it doesn't
I
tell you it has
this.
To be that. But yeah.
Ezekiel was a prophet, and I knew that, but I just wanted to be sure, you know, it's been a long time since Sunday school. He was a prophet, and he spent most of his life just prophesying, you know, his messages from God and what have you. I don't think he was martyred.
Yeah.
That was a question we were talking about. But Proyas throws it in your face, and then he throws a lot of sci-fi in your face, even to the point where he makes a shout-out to, I personally think, to one of his own movies, Dark City.
Yeah.
In the
well,
way
the bad guys look
in the way that the,
oh, the
alien,
the bad guys,
the
sorry,
alien
the aliens,
angels
yeah.
look.
Yeah.
And what happens is he literally gives you a pick and choose ending, where
yeah.
you know,
well, that's the ending. I mean, you guys have seen it, but the children, you know, they get taken by these angels / aliens, and the Earth blows up. From well,
apocalypse.
It gets heated, yeah. From
yeah, the world,
a sun
the world,
flare.
A sun flare. The world burns.
It gets destroyed, and
which was another awesome sequence, I think.
Yeah, and you see a bunch of vessels, you know, go to the sky, go towards the sky, and then after the world, you know, gets destroyed, the next scene is these children in this field, reminding of Gladiator with, you know, the,
totally actually,
but, yeah,
totally
with,
stupid
with the field, but no, but these like. What? Not grass. It's like this, like futuristic
wheat fields.
Yeah,
you know, kind of thing.
But very futuristic, and you know, they are on this field. You don't really see. I don't think you see anything out. Like you see the tree. This
well,
tree,
no, I mean,
but you don't see any other children.
It appears as though they're either imagining, living in, or recreating.
Yeah, all those
biology,
options.
You know, or Earth. Yeah. But you see a planet in the background, which could be just another world being made, or it could be, you know, another heaven, you know, and that's what it comes down to. Is this sci-fi ending where these people are living in some sort of Isaac Asimov short story where they're recreating, you know, it's like a foundation story, you know, where they're recreating, they're making a planet or something like that, which would be cool.
Yeah.
Or are they in heaven?
Yeah.
You know, or is this movie about,
yeah,
is this movie about faith? Yeah. You know, there's a signs kind of a thing going on where Nicolas Cage loses his wife. He lost his faith. His father was a pastor. He doesn't talk to his father anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he regains his faith, I guess you could say, by becoming the sacrificial lamb, you know, like a Jesus kind of a figure. And so you could make that argument. Or you could say that this is just a great science fiction story where, you know, the kids had these powers, just like the, what was her name? The Lucinda.
Lucinda,
had the powers. And, you know, and it's all about, fate and if you can choose and stuff like that.
That's what I love about this movie is, you know, it could have used this number thing and just
like
gone with
23.
It. Like number 23 and just kept going on that, until the, a boring ending. But, you know, it did so much more. Like the fact that we've been talking about this on the podcast.
Ridiculous.
Like,
I mean, you know, when we saw the trailer for it, I didn't cringe. I was kind of interested in it.
Oh, yeah.
It,
no. I always had a slight interest.
But, I mean, you know, there's been, and you know, I try not to hate on Nicolas Cage because I still maintain he's a pretty good actor.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of bad Nicolas Cage movies lately, so it's like,
I don't know if I want to bring that up, but
here he goes again.
Online I was reading that, his movies, the movies he's done in the last, you know, five years, have made his, if he makes a good performance from now on, like people will be reminded of these horrible performances and just, you know, laugh. Like when he yells in Knowing, I just think of like The Wicker Man. You know, how to get burned.
Right.
And it just makes, like, I just can't take it seriously.
No,
so
exactly.
That's, it's unfortunate that, like, even if he can, you know, maybe I may be able to.
Well, it pisses me off because I was always hoping that Lord of War, which kind of got forgotten, which is a great movie directed by Andrew Niccol, about gun running and everything. I always thought, I was at a backlog hope that it would become like a Gattaca.
Yeah.
And like would become this like cult kind of a hit.
Yeah.
And I just don't think there's a chance for that now because Nick Cage is such a
he's such a
figurehead
streak
of like bad acting or whatever. Which is such a shame. I mean that guy's made great movies.
Yeah.
Leaving Las Vegas, Raising Arizona. Actually I really don't like that movie, but like
I love the recent batch of Matchstick Man adaptation.
You know, adaptation was great.
Or Weatherman. Sorry.
The Weatherman I never saw that was good.
I liked it,
yeah.
A little depressing, but
Knowing the thing that saves it, you know, because there is some rough acting, the writing isn't always clean, but the ending, the last 25 minutes of that movie is just so fucking ambitious. Like it does, I don't personally think it achieves everything it wants to.
No,
but like I just like that Alex Proyas is trying really, really hard to like rekindle the flame that once was science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like that he's trying. I mean, he tried in Dark City. I think he could succeed with that movie. The Crow was, you know, I think more metaphysical than science fiction, but I guess it was kind of science fiction. And I mean, iRobot, we can just kind of just say that was a fun movie.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I didn't do
it.
Anything new there, but I mean, I enjoyed it. Produced by Fox, actually.
Yeah.
That was something they did. Yeah, go give Knowing your money if you have $10
Definitely.
To spare. It's worth it.
I mean, I hope that you haven't listened to this. I mean, I hope you have.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, hope maybe you're turning back in and you haven't listened. But,
back.
You know,
go see
if you have seen it, then good for you.
Yeah.
All and right. Hopefully you liked it as much as we did.
All right. We should probably wrap up because
yeah.
It's getting long.
Good.
So right about now, we are going to start our eventual interview. I'm going to insert it. And, yeah. Thank you, everyone. The next film we're going to be reviewing is Adventureland, coming out in theaters this Friday. Our friend John Rannick is going to be joining us. He is the senior arts editor at the University of Buffalo paper, The Spectrum. I'm going to be stepping out since I did not attend the screening of this film, but Dan and John are going to talk about it. Here's John.
Hey, John.
Hey, Dan.
For all those who are listening, me and John work together at The Spectrum. I am a copy editor currently. I was the arts editor a couple of years back. I mentor John in some ways, not really. We both work there, and now he's the arts editor. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yes, that is true, for one. The first time I met Dan, I was a fellow writer, and I saw Dan get a little bit teary-eyed at a bad review, and I thought to myself, well, I don't like him. He takes himself a little bit too seriously, and he proceeded to get a job at the paper, and I was still a staff writer, so then I started to not like him even more. And then I kept writing, and he kept being Dan and listening to Bon Iver. And
John kept on being John and listening to
Fall Out Boy, is what he was going to say.
Fall Out Boy.
And eventually we talked, and I ended up liking Dan, even though he was like everything I hated at the beginning of the paper, except for the one really overweight girl that got front row tickets to see Korn.
Fucked up.
I would have liked to have seen Korn front row.
Fucked up.
That's fucked up.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Is that what they say?
That's what they say.
Okay. But I'm glad to be here on Dan and Jordan's podcast. When I was walking here, there's like Asian gauntlet music. I felt like I was in the Bloodsport movie.
You might have been in the Bloodsport movie.
Getting ready for a battle or a bukkake.
Did you see JCVD?
I did not.
Oh, man. That would have been awesome. All right. So let's talk about this movie. Adventureland. We both saw this earlier this morning.
That's true.
Good way to start the day, right?
It was a good day. I woke up early. I came to South Campus. I took a nap with my girlfriend, Katie, who is sitting in the other room. She's probably not happy, but she can deal with that. Dan came. We had a bagel.
A bagel at Dunkin' Donuts.
A bagel at Dunkin' Donuts. We walked over to the theater. There was an old woman who almost didn't let us in because she didn't know Dan. Not that she knew
mean.
Me. But she let us in. I think she forgot. So we lucked out. And
she did forget.
You know, dementia sets in. But we got in the movie we've been wanting to see, even though my ride and co-editor Garrett Carlson bailed on me twice and says he's sick, but I'm not buying it.
Hi, Garrett, if you're listening.
He's a little bit of a Jeremy Piven.
Except
Garrett doesn't do coke.
Yet. Okay, so Adventureland, directed by Greg Mottola, who directed Superbad.
That is true. If you've seen the advertisements and the poster, you would know that, because it is virtually the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. What do you mean? No. Adventureland is not virtually the same thing as Superbad.
No, the advertisements for Superbad and Adventureland
are the same thing.
Almost the same. It's the same color, the same tone, very similar.
But
fonts.
The movies, though, are
the movies,
very different.
Polar opposites.
Polar opposites, definitely.
That is true.
This movie is a lot nicer, a lot sweeter, a lot more like honest.
It is. It feels good. It feels really bad and awkward at times. You know, in the end, it's not a movie that you can be embarrassed about. Like, you know, if you saw Superbad with your girlfriend and she didn't think that cock jokes were funny and you laughed the whole time, you're not going to have to deal with that.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, seriously, I mean, it's not gonna kind of force you into those awkward crude joke situations if that's just not something you're into, you know, the way that a lot of Apatow comedies do. This isn't like a strictly an Apatow comedy because Judd Apatow didn't really have too much to do with it. He was thanked.
True.
He's thanked at the end in the credits, but
he's a bit of a mentor.
I mean, Greg Mottola directed a lot of undeclared episodes. But I mean, it stars Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart is the lead actress.
Bella Swan.
Twilight. And so she's coming to her own. She's a star kind of now.
She is.
Jesse Eisenberg, on the other hand, he's been around. He was in The Squid and the Whale, a very good movie. You should definitely check out if you have not yet. And he is in a movie coming out called The Education of Charlie Banks actually, which probably won't
That's
be his star his star-striking role.
I wouldn't say so.
Who directed it, just quickly?
Directed by Fred Durst. It was made...
Oh, wait, Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit.
Maybe you've heard of Limp Bizkit.
Maybe you've lived your fucking life and heard of Limp
Bizkit. Every white person with angst in their heart has listened and liked Limp Bizkit at some point in time. Fred Durst directed the movie. He had a Russian woman who co-directed with him that probably doesn't get credit.
Just keep rolling.
That is true.
So that is his next movie. I guess it's maybe it's getting released because Adventureland is getting released. That could be like a marketing kind of a thing going on. But Adventureland, Jesse Eisenberg is the lead. His name is James. He is planning to go to grad school in Columbia to become a journalist. he has this whole backpacking trip to go to Europe during the summer. He's
much much like money. Dan Mecca.
Much like me, actually. It's very similar in my backpacking trips.
That's for all those European women out there that are listening.
Oh, yes. For all those who are listening. But, yeah, no. So, yeah, he has this plan to go backpacking with his friends, and it falls through because his parents kind of bail out on the money that they were supposed to loan him, give him. So he's stuck in Pittsburgh, where the movie takes place. It's also 1987, and he...
And what's worse than Pittsburgh in the 80s? Yeah.
Few things, apparently. No, he gets a job at Adventureland. It's like a local theme park, just one of those crappy theme parks.
For local people, it's like Fantasy Island. It's like the... It's like the dollar brand cereal.
The lake compounds for those downstate.
Like, you want to go get Fruity Pebbles, and you pick up Fruity Crystals. That's what Adventureland is.
Amen. I don't think there's a better analogy. Yeah. I don't even think that there's a better analogy. Or
go to school in downtown Buffalo.
Or if, like, when you would go to a party way back in the day and they would have RC Cola. Do you remember that?
My job actually still serves RC Cola, so let's not shit on RC Cola.
Oh, my God.
Or as we call it, Coke.
Oh, my God. But there's actually a lot of that in the movie, a lot of faking in the movie, like with the games. They, like, bend the basketball hoops. This is in Adventureland. They, like, they glue the hats on some of the mannequins in the game where you have to throw a ball at a hat to knock it off to win a prize and everything. It's a funny movie. It's really natural. There's a lot of observational humor. There aren't really any punchlines. I pretty much said as much in my review of my text review of the movie, which is on our website right now. John actually also had a review, which he wrote for the Spectrum newspaper, and kind of not even reading each other's reviews while we were writing, we kind of wrote the same thing about the punchlines. It's a lot more natural. A movie like I Love You, Man, which I saw, that was a movie that had a lot of punchlines, a lot of jokes, and it was very natural too, but it relied on those jokes and, like, responses. This movie is more kind of watching people live their lives and being able to relate to it. You know, there's a scene where James and M, who's Kristen Stewart, they drive home. M's giving him a ride home, and it's, like, very awkward. They don't say anything. They just listen to music, and they don't know whether to bob their heads or not. It's, like, very awkward.
That scene was after a person that M may be interested in was seen with another girl.
Right.
That's all we can say.
Yeah, we're not going to give anything else. Yeah, exactly. We're not going to give anything else away. But...
What happens? What happens out of that awkward silence, Dan?
What happens after that, out of that awkward silence?
Yeah.
They listen to music and...
Passion.
Well, not that scene. Is there passion?
There is passion.
Oh, yeah, they do. That's right. There's a little bit of drinking. There's actually a lot of bit of drinking in this
movie.
There's
a lot of drinking, which is a good thing.
And a lot of bit of driving.
But good thing to bring up. A lot of drinking and driving. I don't know if that's something we want to...
condone.
Yeah, condone or glorify, but they do it, and it looks pretty cool.
I mean, in the film it does. But then again, that was 20 years ago, and I guess, like...
That was the 80s.
That was the 80s.
That's when we were born.
Yay. So. But now it's not the 80s. No, but... Yeah, there's a lot of that, and that's why it's relatable. You know, there's a lot of weed and all that stuff, and it's fun. But, you know, that's kind of where the badness, the R-ness stops. There isn't really any nudity or anything, which is kind of refreshing.
It is. It's nice to not see...
a penis.
You know, like I said before, penis or crowning. I don't need to see a head.
You don't need to see a head.
Starting to come out of it.
You also don't need to see Seth Rogen.
That's true. Seth Rogen's funny, and he's smart. But as he said in Zach and Mary, he looks like a fucking beluga whale.
Yeah.
We don't need
that. Amen.
And we don't need to see him.
Observer Report's coming out in like a week anyway. So
that's true. He gets to make out with another attractive woman, which still pisses me off.
Yeah, that's not right. But go see this movie. This is actually a very good date movie. You know, like John was saying, it's not like super bad where you're going to have to kind of think, oh, is my girlfriend going to laugh at this or Tropic Thunder? Actually, I took a girl to see Tropic Thunder.
I think that'd be a bad call.
I took her to see it. It was kind of like on a whim. It wasn't supposed to be like that, but we ended up going. And for all those who saw Tropic Thunder, they have fake trailers in the beginning that for a minute seem like real trailers.
Bust a Nut.
Yeah, Bust a Nut came out, like that music video. And she started freaking out because she thought it was a real thing. And like she got really appalled. And like I had to like calm her down in the theater because she thought
that busting out was like a real thing. Like what was it, pussy sweat or whatever? She thought it was all real stuff.
It was never a drink.
This is fake. It's all fake. It's fake. But then she got it and she laughed. But that was,
yeah. Papa Rannick wasn't real big on that for varying reasons. He's not a big fan of the hip hop culture.
Yeah.
Or people in it. But we'll leave that alone.
Yeah, leave that right alone.
Yes, we will.
No, but
watch Gran Torino. That's my father.
Get off my lawn.
I'm not gonna say anything else.
No, but eventually, and you're not gonna have that problem. You're gonna definitely go. Not. You're gonna have a good time. Unless you fuck it up, you're gonna have a good time. This movie will do a whole lot for you. Kristen Stewart is great. She's really coming into her own.
She has a
certain amount of charm. I wrote in my review. I said that she's got a Meg Ryan kind of, you know, like a neuroses kind of a thing, pre-plastic surgery.
Yeah.
Really good. Really good. Jesse Eisenberg's got the kind of Michael Cera, Adam Brody thing going on, except a little bit more intellectual.
The difference between Eisenberg and Cera is that Eisenberg's got balls. In all of Cera's movies, he kind of plays a naive, cute guy that gets a girl without ever making like a strong move. Eisenberg just, you know, he takes the bull by the vagina and he makes it his, basically.
Proverbially? Is that a word? Proverbially?
Yes.
Yes. No. We both work for a newspaper, by the way. Eisenberg's good.
He is really good.
He's really good. And if you've seen The Squid and the Whale, you know that he can act dramatically. And actually, speaking of that, I'm going to take that acting dramatically and talk really briefly about Ryan Reynolds.
Yes, let's go there.
Very surprising. I'm a Ryan Reynolds fan. I think he's funny, but I'd be the first to admit he gets a little heavy-handed, a little overwhelming sometimes.
A little Chevy Chase.
That's a great adjective. Sometimes, you know, he gets a little Chevy Chase with his sarcasm, and it's too much. Case in point, Blade motherfucking Trinity. Shut the fuck up. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
But you saw him without that shirt on.
Oof, well.
And in fact, for those who have seen Dan without a shirt on, it's pretty impressive, but it's not Ryan Reynolds.
It's not Ryan Reynolds. I will be the first to admit that. But Reynolds in this movie is very subtle. He's very grounded. He's very reserved, and that's awesome because it turns out, whether you believe or not, he's really not a bad actor at all. He has a small role, and he plays it to perfection in a lot of ways. And the way Mattola writes the screenplay and directs it, he allows this character, who has a depth that I wasn't expecting, to kind of defend himself through his actions, but also crucify himself. And that's like a lot of the characters in the movie. You know, there's a lot of depth to a lot of the characters, whether they be supporting or otherwise. But one character who's not that deep, but funny as shit, Bill Hader.
Bill Hader, very funny. Mustache.
Bill Hader, SNL. Jason Segel's stepbrother from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Funny as hell.
He was also in Hot Rod.
Oh, yeah. Wait, he was?
Was that him?
I think he was. Well, I know that Danny McBride was in Hot Rod.
It was either Hader or Forte, and I think it was Hader.
It wasn't Forte.
It was Hader. He was in Hot Rod. He had a mullet and he wore Stone Cold Steve Austin shirts.
He was good
in that movie.
He was Hot Rod.
My father was actually in that movie.
Ian McShane is John Mulaney's
father.
That's
an inside joke. My dad looks like Ian McShane.
A lot like Ian McShane, like a skinnier version of Ian McShane.
Yeah.
That's the second out of two episodes where we've mentioned Hot Rod. Truth.
It is impressive. I only knew there was one episode.
Well, this will be the only episode that John's on. No, I'm just kidding. Hopefully, John will be a future contributor. We're still in contract negotiations. We don't know.
I think Jordan's a little worried about the cuteness factor. I'm not trying to step on his toes.
And you don't want to step on those Ralph toes.
But, you know, he's got the Ralphlet. You guys have seen it.
If you guys don't know what the Ralphlet is, feel free to access the About page on our website and just admire Jordan's head of hair.
Yeah. Coif.
Yes. And it's a Ralphlet. I mean, that's really, I think that's what it comes down to.
Anne Marie ain't got shit on that.
Whatever my hair looks like is nothing compared to that let.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, I guess you want to just do a quick little grade, I guess. What would you give Evangeline out of 10?
Out of 10, I'd give it like an 8. I go 8.7.
Yeah, I gave it on the website. I gave it an 8, but it was solid 8.
It was really good.
I liked it. It stayed with me. I thought about it all day. I'll probably think about it more. You know, it's not gonna. It's we were talking about Duplicity earlier. In these two movies, in a row, you know, I saw Duplicity a couple days ago. Like, pleasant surprises in March. Like, you know, March is usually kind of a shitty month for movies. I Love You, Man, Duplicity, this. There's a lot of good stuff coming out. Monsters vs. Aliens looks very good.
Did the Wrong Turn 2 trailer leak? I heard it did.
The Wrong Turn 2. Oh, no. Hang on. And also in March, let's not forget, 12 Rounds.
John Cena.
Randy Harlan directed.
He's untouchable.
By the director of Deep Blue Sea and Cutthroat Island.
And Die Hard 2.
Die Hard. Duh.
Avec Vengeance.
The Deuce.
That was French.
The Deuce. Oh, that movie's horrible, by the way, if you haven't seen it. I hate Die Hard 2. I really hate it.
That's the one where it was like winter.
Right? It's winter in an airport. And there's actually a scene in it where John McClane is on the wing of a plane, like on the outside of the wing, like on the wing of a plane while it's moving. I just want everyone to think about that. Okay. That's
unless it's Statham, that is not possible.
Statham, can I get a crank to high voltage? Hell yes.
Statham.
I cannot wait for that movie. Anyway, getting off the subject.
That's a future episode.
That's a future episode for another time. Look out. Rannick will definitely be on that one without a doubt. Johnny R., the big guy, coming through. Hopefully his material will be on our website sooner rather than later. Adventureland, go see it. Very good, very honest, very funny when it needs to be.
Yeah.
But more dramatic than probably most of the comedies that you'll see, and better for it.
Like I said, the last thing that it is funny, and that's good.
That's a good thing. Definitely a good thing. I can't wait to see what Mottola gives us next, and hopefully Eisenberg becomes as famous as Michael Cera, because I'd love to see the two of them face off in a movie or something.
I could see them playing brothers because they look like the same person.
That would be a godsend, without a doubt. Maybe Jonah Hill play a waiter or something.
Maybe Schlepp Brothers.
Don't tease me. Don't you do it.
I think I just did.
Schlepp.
Don't tell Jakob.
I will not tell Jakob. Okay. Well, if we haven't offended you, we're sorry, and we'll try better next time. For Dan Mecca.
And for John Rannick.
This is the Film Stage Review of Adventureland. And John, we hope to see more of you in the future. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Dan.
Okay.
So thanks for listening to the Film Stage podcast. This is our third episode. And we've gotten, you know, a lot of positive response. And I ask that, you know, if anyone has any questions, doesn't like what we say.
Yeah, exactly.
Loves what we say. Has any questions about any movies, love it. You know, anything. Definitely. Comment under the comment section.
Email.
Or email.
Where, Jordan?
Yeah. jpraup@gmail.com. That's jpraup@gmail.com. You can also feel free to add. We have a Facebook. You can add us on Facebook. Send us a message.
Yeah, become a fan.
Yeah, become a fan on Facebook. Just search the Film Stage, or you can find our Facebook links in our About page. On our website, and
there's always Twitter.
The Film Stage, twitter.com/thefilmstage,
or twitter.com/DJ Mecca, MECCA.
Yeah, do both. We just want to thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And what do you think? You know, what are some movies you think we're gonna review on our next?
Fast and Furious. And then, you know,
X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Seriously, don't download it. That's mean.
That's horrible. That's illegal.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch Fast right Furious, now. Yeah, it'll probably be Fast
Sunshine Cleaning. I don't know if you want to see it. 70% are on Tomatoes. It's coming to town this weekend.
Yeah, so it'll probably be Fast and Furious or Sunshine Cleaning. So if that floats your boat. And then we'll always have the old movies and the movie news.
Yeah.
And just awesome personalities and charm.
Yeah. All of that. And for free. Oh, and wow, I forgot to announce. You can now subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Oh, yes.
Which
yes,
is big just
news.
Great.
Big news.
Just go. You can search on iTunes, or you can.
For free 99.
Yeah, search the Film Stage on iTunes. You know, it's not up at the top yet, but you can always also search, you know, on our website. There'll be links there. But subscribe, you know, it's so easy. Just hit subscribe, and then it automatically downloads it for you. Then you can just throw it on your iPod, listen to it. You know, whatever you're doing.
In class, what have you.
Yeah, please in class. No.
But thanks for listening. Keep listening. And if you have, like we said, any comments, concerns, questions,
email, comment, Twitter, yes.
Tweet.
Do whatever you want to do. And
good night.
Good night. And good luck.
Good night and good luck, everyone.